Well, this partnership goes back quite a while. Almost 40 years or so.
Yeah.
Brings up a funny story, being in seventh grade. You know, not many people know this, but our staff does know this. We have a suspension slip in our coffee shop that shows that you and I were suspended in the seventh grade.
For what?
The truth is, we fought each other in Miss Gadani's English class. It's hard to say what exactly precipitated it, but there was some back and forth and a drawing of lines and a, well, what about this and what about that? There was a pre-negotiation, but at some point, there was a line crossed, and I will say this on camera, I felt compelled to punch you. And, you know, my whatever 13-year-old self decided that was a good idea, and it went from there. I do believe your brother went and got the teacher, and
yeah,
we ended up in the principal's office.
So I have a question. Like, at that moment, is that when you realized that negotiating real estate transactions probably shouldn't happen that way?
You know, there's principled stances, and there's positive, caring, and humble. There's a lot of things going on. It's important to have the right amount of self-belief without delving into extreme ego. But, you know, at 13, those lines blur a little bit.
Yeah.
And anyway, we have a funny story, and who would have thought that, you know,
and then
35 years later, we're here.
And then during suspension, during the time we were suspended,
I remember throwing a football around, and
we hung around up, yeah. hung out with each other. Created a good foundation.
We're
here today to talk a little bit about our company's origin story, but you know, we realized that it would be a little more entertaining if we talked about where this friendship came from. We've been friends, as Joe mentioned, for close to 40 years.
At some point, it became a brotherhood of sorts.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
almost in fact.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and they, they say that, you know, partnerships come with their challenges, but I think much like a marriage, to use that analogy, like a partnership that works is one where we can laugh and talk about moments of conflict and things like that, and ultimately still recognize the long-term value of us being together.
Yeah. I probably won you over on the day I punched you.
You're
this guy won't take my stuff. This is my kind of guy. Wow. All right.
He's got some grit.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great foundation. And after all that time, to then go and create a company 15 years ago together and to begin to do all the very hard work of making a company work has been special. So today we're going to talk about that path and also what that's meant for our clients and why we do this. Any
and
thoughts
what
on that, Ryan?
Means for the future. Yeah. I mean, we just started in December of 2008. I'm pretty sure that the collapse of Bear Stearns happened within 60 days of us prior to us deciding to go into business together. So probably not optimal timing.
It was a challenging Christmas.
Yes, but at the same time, you know, it allowed us, we didn't realize at the time, to enter into this very problematic, challenging environment in the real estate landscape.
Yeah. I mean, to do anything, you have to just start. And when we started, we did not necessarily have a vision for where we are today or where we're headed. I told my wife I was quitting my job and had enough money to pay the bills until Valentine's Day. I mean, like it was very much an act of survival in, you know, December of 2008. And we got to work doing all sorts of work. And coming through the Great Recession like that ended up being a blessing in that there were so many lessons to be learned and so many pieces of work that needed to be done while the world was collapsing. I personally remember serving REO papers and informing a business owner he was losing his business. And like that was a really traumatic thing for him and for me to learn to be graceful in that situation and to be almost like a customer service person, because then I had to sell his building. And working on behalf of banks really taught us like how to not get over leveraged or what things go wrong, or and also to observe the postures, the hubris, the ego, the greed that
That gets you.
That can happen.
That can get you to there. Yeah, and we were handed essentially a lot of really broken assets at that time.
Oh yeah.
You had owners that were in various stages of foreclosure for prolonged periods of time. The last thing they were doing was caring about the maintenance and ongoing health of that property.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't realize at the time, but we were earning our master's or PhD in taking really crummy run properties and figuring out how to create value out of that. And
where
doing
we took
it
back
over
an
and over.
Apartment complex, and it had an inch or two of sewage in the basement. And
yeah,
as bad as that is, we were delighted to get paying work.
Yeah.
It was such an opportunity.
Yeah. And to realize that, you know, fast forward a little bit, we started to recognize that we're being hired by people and we're being paid a fee.
Yeah.
To do all the value creation. You know, we were the ones when the bank or the distressed borrower or whatever the case was, when they had a problem that needed fixing, we were the ones being, you know, brought in to do that.
We developed a reputation for being can-do problem solvers. I mean, we worked on a portfolio of mobile home parks. We worked on a very large hospital-related property. We worked on
shopping
a bunch
centers.
Of office buildings.
Yeah.
We were managing them. We were doing leasing.
Yep.
We were dealing with AR and problem tenants who wouldn't pay the rent.
Yep. Stabilizing.
For a while there, we had a maintenance crew that was solving problems on the ground. Like, we were in every part of these. And it began to dawn on us over time that, all right, people from outside of our area were wanting us to do everything. Like, they believed we were the best people to solve the problems of these properties. We were doing everything except capital. We were doing everything except
ownership.
Like, we were really good with like owning problems. And we thought, all right, why can't we do this for our friends and family?
Yeah.
Why can't we do that for
our
tertiary and secondary market that we live in? And from there, a kernel was born that changed our lives and changed the company.
Yeah, and it started with one property here, one property there, and we would take the same dedication and expertise that we had learned over time, and we would apply it to a property where we were investing our dollars with friends, family, other investors, and then again and again until we recognized this is the joy that we love, you know, being a part of.
So during that about decade period, we worked on hundreds of properties, both some on our own account, some that mm-hmm. we were managing for others, or but some of the early properties we bought were a 20-unit apartment complex. We had a strip center.
Yeah,
it had a bar and a vape shop in it. I mean, the early days. That's right on McHenry here in Modesto. Then we had an office building that came back from a bank.
Yep.
But there was a key moment where you and I were trying to think what should be our next deal. And we ended up finding this shopping center that was selling at a 9 cap. And it had sort of all the right things wrong with it. Great location. It had a large government tenant.
Yeah.
And I remember we called the broker and we got into escrow. And we, you know, prior to that, our largest deal had been $1 million. This was a $12.4 million asset, and it was a big gut check. But within 30 to 45 days, we'd raised all the money to do it, and we still own that property today with those investors. And it's been a great cash flow. It's been excellent.
Yeah, and from there, we built Griseda Partners Fund 1, Fund 2, Fund 3, and today Fund 4. And we have hundreds of investors, both institutional and private, high net worth. And all of them are on this journey with us. And it feels like, in some sense, we've cracked the code of this investing in these smaller markets, investing in secondary and tertiary markets. We have a lot to learn ahead of us. But in some sense, because we really were on the ground floor of figuring out how to create value in a very challenging environment in geographies that have their own ways of operating, it feels a little bit like we've cracked the code into being able to do that in other markets.
What started as an extremely local idea became a regional idea, became a statewide idea. Today we're in 4 states.
Yep.
And we have 70 employees. Many of those are boots on the ground people at properties, but we've developed that the habits and the patterns, the culture, the team that is adept at raising the capital, finding the properties. It's like an assembly line.
Yep. Executing the
properties
add.
And getting them sold again. And so it's our job today on behalf of our investors is to scale the company in the right way so that we're seeing opportunities broadly across a geography that we're very capable of handling.
Yeah.
So that we're always finding great deals and letting our market positions mature and building up a larger investment company that serves a larger base.
Well, and you know, you step back and all of these smaller markets in the Western US, there's $1.6 trillion of real estate. So it's really not a small market in that sense. It's a huge opportunity. And I've heard someone say recently, and I believe it, that really what we are trying to do is become the Blackstone of these secondary tertiary markets. You go back 15 years ago and self-storage or mobile home parks, these were not institutional asset classes. And the litany of reasons of why was very similar to secondary and tertiary markets. But you fast forward to today, and those are regular parts of people's portfolio.
Someone asked me the other day, what drives you? It's kind of a weird question, but clearly something drives us and drives you, or you wouldn't be here 15 years later. So random question, what drives you, Ryan?
The opportunity. I mean, candidly, when I get up every morning, I think of the opportunity. That's where I mentioned crack the code or see the matrix or whatever the right analogy is. But I feel like we see an opportunity set out there that today is unexploited. It's an opportunity set that I believe and we believe over time will become a regular part of investing. And so to see that opportunity and recognize that we individually as a company have the right skill set and the right experience to be able to execute on that, we could... There's an argument that we could just sit here where we are, and you know we went from local to regional to kind of super regional, and we could just say we're good where we're at. You know, we've grown to a size that we're comfortable.
Common approach.
But when I see that opportunity set ahead of us and recognize that kind of that phrase of somebody's going to do it, why not us? That excites me. That gets me up every morning to think, Why can't we be the ones doing that? And when I step back and think, who is best suited to do that? And you look at how our company has grown in these markets, we are exceptionally well suited to do it.
I was talking to someone last night at a dinner, a very successful business person who's on our board. And he said, most people and business people do their very best work in their 50s. And that was pretty interesting because I was telling him, you know, I'm 45 and I really, between now and 50, want to get so much done. But the idea that at 45, between 45 and 50, like we have a really great time in the market cycle and a great time in our ability and a great time in our company's trajectory to really accomplish something. But this might, there may be 25 more years of this to come. And I guess what drives me is the idea that every company you see out there was done by sort of people who started something. And I feel like we are building something that's exciting. And I love working with people and seeing them flourish in their careers. And this is really a people thing. It's like, this is a tremendous gift. And I'm excited to see where this goes and to be a steward, like a quiet champion or whatever it takes to see where this thing will go and make the most of it. I think it's... incredible for our investors. I think it's incredible for our team. And I think it's a real joy to be able to do it with you after 40 years. So
couldn't agree more.
Thank you for listening to Durable Value, an investor's podcast, where we demystify commercial real estate with safe, sound investment strategies to help you balance your portfolio. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more, visit GresetaPartners.com, where you'll find more information, investors' tools, case studies, and more. This podcast is hosted by Joe Muratori and Ryan Suela. It's produced, edited, and mixed by Melodic, with intro music by Ian Post. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.